I love the live experience because I love to be immersed in the conversation that's happening. And the Q&A after is probably my favorite part, because that's where you can really stretch the learning that happened during that live event. But for me, I feel like I need that webinar. I need that recording. I need the recording because sometimes the excitement sort of doesn't allow me to absorb as much as I would as if I could listen back to it a little bit slowly, you know, piecemeal it, take some notes, rewind and go back and listen again. I know that I do that a lot with audiobooks.
Welcome to the Teachers on Fire podcast. I'm your host, Tim Cavey, and today I want to bring you something a little different. If you're a faithful listener to this podcast, you already know that I host the Teachers on Fire Roundtable every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern. These are live stream conversations meant to warm your heart, spark your thinking, and ignite your professional practice. Today's content is a similar style with one important difference. The conversation was hosted by my friends Che Cheney and Pav Wander on the School Rubric YouTube channel. This was such a great discussion that after I appeared there, I asked the School Rubric producers, Wallace Ting and Ryan Segar, for permission to republish it here on my podcast, and thankfully they agreed. This conversation is titled, Can Livestream Platforms Change Professional Development? I was joined by fellow guest Noah Daniel, creator and host of the Personal Playlist podcast. Enjoy this conversation.
Jim and Noah are great educational leaders that have inspired Pav and I immensely through the great content and the great community in which they build for podcasting and connecting with people. And they are great content creators and great live creators, but also very supportive of everyone else that's creating great live content.
Hi, everybody. I'm Noah Daniel, and I'm a teacher first and foremost and always. I'm also a consultant, and I'm the co-founder of The Mentory. And I have a show called the Personal Playlist Podcast. Every person on the panel tonight has been on that show. And I also do a live show every single Thursday on Voice Radio called On Ed Mentors. Beyond that, I have a new book coming out like in the next week and a half. So that's kind of exciting too.
My name is Tim. I'm an eighth grade teacher, assistant principal, and the host of the Teachers on Fire podcast. And yes, like Noah, I've had a lot of connections with this fabulous panel. I love this topic. I did a master's thesis on the impact of podcasting on professional practice. Podcasting is not really live streaming, but it's getting closer. It's on demand. And I also do a live stream show every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific. So I'm very interested in this topic today. Can't wait to get into it.
Awesome, guys. I am so happy. I'm going to reiterate what Che said. I am definitely fangirling right now. You two have been huge for Che and myself. We've been following your journey since we entered the podcasting scene. And so I have to say that I am very proud to be sitting on a panel with you guys talking about something that you do so well and Che and I are constantly learning from. So thank you for joining us today. And I'm really excited to dive into this conversation about the benefits of live content delivery. And there's so many different ways that we're able to do this now in the social media sphere or just in the tech sphere altogether. So I'm really, really excited to dive in. So thanks for joining us today, guys.
Oh, I think we are all set up for our first question. I want to get my notebook. I want to get my marker because I know some gems are going to be dropped here tonight. But let's queue up Mr. Michael Murphy from Texas, y'all, for our first question of the night.
All right, Jane Pav. Live platforms are great, and I enjoy engaging with the content. But how can these offerings and platforms continue to evolve and innovate to meet the needs and wants of educators? Thanks, y'all.
We got a great question from Mr. Michael Murphy to get us started here tonight, because this is a brand new platform and there's all kinds of things that many of us have been dabbling in. But let's get into some responses and not just listen to the gym guys set it up. So we'll go with Tim to start, and then we'll shift over to Noah and then to Pav Wander.
Well, first of all, shout out to Mike for that great question. And Mike, thank you so much for supporting all of our work here on the panel. We so love and appreciate you. That's a really good question because it cuts right to the heart of what we're all doing. And a couple of things come to mind. One, we want to be supportive and responsive to the needs of educators. So I think about, you know, when we remember back in the days when we could actually go to a face-to-face conference, one of the markers of value would be,
did I get something practical that I can implement in my classroom right away? And I love a great keynote. I love getting fired up. I love being inspired. But as I leave that conference, how am I practically going to actually be different in my practice? Give me some tools, give me some resources, give me some strategies. And so that is a challenge I find on my show here on School Rubric and elsewhere. We can have a lot of great conversations, but something that resonated recently on my show was this example of a rubric from a high school English class. And we shared the screen and sort of walked through it. And that stuck out as one example of something that teachers could say, hey, that's, you know, something I can share, I can take from Twitter, I can use. And by the way, the teacher is Tyler Rablin, so shout out to him. But that was something really practical that had high value and high application the very next day or the next Monday or whatever. So that's something I think about, is being practical and niching down and really targeting on topics that have that application immediately.
That's a great response. Noah, you want to add on to that great response that Tim had?
I totally want to add on to it, because I want to start with responsive. So you can't be dynamic and evolving unless you know what people want. And so if you have channels where people can weigh in and actually ask for what the show can be about or recommend a panel, you're really expanding your opportunity to meet a bevy of educators and have more voices, because that's ultimately, especially on Voice Ed Radio, the goal. We want to amplify the voices of educators. But I also want to build on the idea of actionability. So you go to a conference and things are cool and you're like, yeah, I totally want to do this. And then you go home and you're like, yeah, that was cool. And then like nothing happens and you go on and you do your thing. You're like, yeah, that person had some really good ideas. But when you get the energy and authenticity of a live experience, you also have the archived show to fall back on. So you have that point of to ponder, that idea to really marinate on. And then if you're not sure exactly how to do it, you have an entry point and then an access point. And through that, you can not only consider the new ideas, but take the time to implement it. And the other thing, just really quickly, I love about it is the authenticity of messing up. Right. When you're doing something live, you can feel the vibe of people being a little bit nervous, and that's just real. And the more real we have, especially in virtual world, that is something that I know I gravitate to.
I just thought of one more thing too, and that is I'm a huge fan of asynchronous instruction, especially in these hybrid and virtual environments. I think there's the idea of scaling teaching and reproducing it and replicating it. And, you know, this idea that students can rewatch a video at their own speed. I think all of those benefits are there. The one thing asynchronous instruction misses out on is that real-time Q&A. And that's something that we miss from the face-to-face classroom. And so thinking about this sort of a medium, this kind of a platform, we do have the real-time Q&A. We have comments and questions coming in right now. And so that has an extra level of value, I think, sometimes when we're going through new content or strategies too.
That's a great point. Pav, how about you dive in and then I'll make something up right afterwards.
I got to highlight Tim and Noah. You made some really great points about the responsiveness of the live experience and then the practicality, you know, being able to watch something and then take it back to your classroom right away in order to be able to implement it. And I think that those are really important things. You highlighted the idea that, Noah, that you can always go back and watch the webinars. And that's key for me. I feel like I love the live experience because I love to be immersed in the conversation that's happening. And the Q&A after is probably my favorite part, because that's where you can really stretch the learning that happened during that live event. But for me, I feel like I need that webinar. I need that recording. I need the recording because sometimes the excitement sort of doesn't allow me to absorb as much as I would as if I could listen back to it a little bit slowly, you know, piecemeal it, take some notes, rewind and go back and listen again. I know that I do that a lot with audiobooks. So for me, I love the live experience, but I really would like to have that live experience recorded for me to also be able to watch back later. So I know that Che and I have talked about this before. That Clubhouse sort of experience, for me, it's a little iffy. I love the idea of it, but I wish it was recorded because I can't always dive into some of these conversations in real time. So I would love to be able to just, there's this conversation happening. I want to be a part of it. I want to at least be able to listen in. But if I can't do it at that moment, then that opportunity is gone. And so for me, that's a little bit of a drawback for those types of platforms. So I'd love to hear either if either of you have something to combat that. I know that it's a different platform. They're reaching for something a little bit different. But, you know, I know that it was kind of in there a little bit, that Clubhouse. It's kind of something new. It's popping up everywhere. And so I'd like to hear what you have to say. Noah, if you've got some ideas on that, please share.
Well, it's different. Like on VoiceEd, when we're live, it's exciting because not only are the people on the show having this live intimate experience, but the people listening can be tweeting live. So that adds another layer. So we can be sharing out, capturing people's brilliance and extending the conversation. And then people who aren't able to listen live can follow the hashtag on EdMentors and see the conversation that's gone on. But thanks to Stephen Hurley, who is not able to be here, but the show could not happen without him. It's archived within 48 hours. It's on our site so people can listen on their own time. And if you know you're an audiobook fan, you also know, and this is the other piece of that Tim was talking about when it comes to virtual learning and the autonomy that students can have. It's the same thing for all learners, right? We want to direct our learning. So if I want it to speed up, I can speed it up and just, I can fast forward to the exact spot I want to hear and I can play it over and over and over again until it resonates exactly how it's supposed to. So it gives me ownership of my learning. And I think everybody deserves that. So one of the things I love so much is that you can really extend the experience beyond the immediate group and you can keep coming back to it.
Noah, you've also been doing some skilled space that's very similar to the Clubhouse, but the Clubhouse can be very general, right? But you've been doing some skilled space, I believe, with Sarah Candela, which is the same type of platform, but very specific for education. And I think that's great. I'll jump in a little bit because I get paid the big bucks to make a few comments. And then you guys can just cut me off for the rest of the show. But I only want to piggyback on the great things you were saying, that for us, for me, I've never had a negative experience in Clubhouse. But what's my anecdotal takeaway if it's benefiting me? Am I bringing anything back to the school or bringing anything back to my teaching? And what I've brought back is great moments of great conversations, but never anything completely practical. And I think having value, there's a comfortable level. You have a level of comfortness when you're listening to a program when you know you can reaccess it. So the Mentory, the anti-racist book clubs, or the tweets that are going out that are that give the links, like Tim was sharing. You're sharing resources. I don't know if it was the same episode, but I remember Tim posting a really great rubric where it had just four terms. And I just said, I'm going to use this. And so maybe the conversation hadn't completely resonated with me, but the strong visual that was out in that social media space that was tied to the task allowed me to build from there. I really feel the value of that live is the shared experience that when we all come together, it's very nostalgic. You know what? On Saturday mornings at 11, I'm coming to watch Tim. On Thursday evenings at 9, I'm going to go listen to Noah. On Wednesday evening, I'm going to go listen to the Anti-Racist Book Club. And then I'm going to ask people to please listen to The Drive on Sunday nights. And The Drive might not be as big as the Staff Room podcast, but the energy of all those people that are there in real time really builds a shared experience. And I'll jump in one more moment before, you know, I move over. Ralph Nader had a really great podcast episode talking about the power of old school radio. And he referenced, and not that we need to get political, but he referenced that the Republicans, one of their great attributes was they invested a lot of money and resources into local radio and local live performances rather than sort of mass nationwide stuff, because you build real relationships and real loyalty through those shared experiences. And he had a document that the Republicans invested in old school live radio platforms as a way of really synergizing. And I think it really does build a really strong community. If anyone wants to jump on that, you can. But I do know we have Tony Coppola lined up with a great second question from California.
Just really quickly on Clubhouse, something I've been thinking about, Shay, is this idea that you and I noticed Melissa mentioned Monica Burns puts out a tweet at the same time as her Clubhouse chat. And I've been thinking there's nothing stopping us from app smashing and actually putting out a Google Doc, linking that on Twitter, pinning it to the top of your profile, and then keeping notes of resources and comments and sort of using that Google Doc that way. So the other path, obviously, is recording the Clubhouse conversation. I know that's a whole other chat that maybe we don't have time for, but I think there are ways to make it more lasting.
Great points, Tim. Yes, absolutely. Are we good for that question?
Just before he comes, I just want to reframe the old school like language around radio, because the imagery and the nostalgia is warm and fuzzy, but it's not an archaic idea. And what's so new and wonderful in terms of access and voice is that, and I'm learning it teaching virtually, is there's so much you can glean from really listening. And you might be doing laundry or walking your dog or working out and doing one of the cool things you guys do, but you can also learn and process. I say it about you. I look forward to being part of that way. But anyway, that process is multifaceted. So you don't only have to be using one sense, you can be using many senses. And that's the new school thing, is that the multiple modality, multiple entry point access. Mm. So I really appreciate you using the term so that I could kind of throw it back at you.
Fantastic. All right, Tony, cue up that question. Let's get rolling.
Educators are increasingly finding creative ways to connect and learn, with more recent trends pointing toward live learning experiences, such as webinars, live streams, and radio. What do you see as the value of these live events, and do they have staying power? And hey, inspire, don't require, Love 360.
That's a pretty good tagline right there, Tony. I love the conversation about where is this going to go. And I'll reference actually a Mark Ryan run and rant tweet, because, you know, what's Mark Ryan always makes you think. And he talked about how there's all this new accessibility, but there's also now a wave of people diving into this community. And does it become oversaturated? Do you as a viewer have to really be more critical of what sources you're going to? Where maybe in a conference, you assume some of that vetting's already happened. And Mark Ryan made a really pointed tweet. He said, check your source. So now that there is so much available, is there more ownership on us as the viewer to really figure out who's speaking? What are they talking about? What's their expertise? Is it too general? Is it too vague? And that's sort of part of what Tony's question is like, where is this going? How's it evolving? And it's sort of the law of unintended consequences. Are there perhaps issues we hadn't considered when it seemed like it was so great that we had all this new rich content out there to consume? Noah, why don't we start with you? Because I think I started with Tim on question one.
So I think that one of the coolest things about these spaces is that you gather the panel and you go live and the rest is who knows. And then the synergy happens. And all of a sudden, people are building on each other's ideas, and people who had, you know, points of view that they're able to express are now able to extend and synthesize them. And there is something more interesting and more complex about the kinds of live spaces. So I believe they have staying power because they do. It's hard to curate what works for you, but then sometimes too much choice, as much as it's difficult, is about you. And the individual gets to decide how they want to spend their time. And one of the things I love so much about our show is we really love it, even if it just stopped in the live space, but it's getting played for staff meetings, or it's getting shared at faculties. And for us, that's the staying power, is that the ideas are catalysts for other people's thinking and what they do with that. And I'll often hear, you know, a year later, I listened to that show and this is what I did. And for me, that's a very powerful thing to know.
Oh, that's a great response. Tim, are you going to follow that up? A lot of Canadian pressure here to deliver.
It's overwhelming. I love the question from Tony. And it's funny, I was just looking at live digital conference presentation platforms today. I'm actually sort of on a committee that's trying to find what's the best one for a local conference happening here. And some of the names that you might recognize are Digitel, Hopin, AirMeet, Hoova, Cvent, Swugo. But to Tony's question, I think these live events, these virtual events, will continue. I think they do have staying power. I think they do a great service, especially to our rural educator friends who maybe can't get to a large city. They do a great service to our international friends who, you know, may have limited access to different conferences happening around them. And I miss face-to-face conferences so badly, it hurts. I was supposed to go to ISTE last year and this year. Both of them canceled, and that is really killing me. But in answer to Tony's question, I think these virtual hybrid events are tremendously valuable. They're only going to get better. they've got to build in that networking, that sort of round table, coffee house, you know, talk in the halls kind of ability. But as they continue to improve in that capacity, they're only going to get more valuable. The key thing about professional development, it's got to continue over time. And so one way that that can happen is if attendees are able to maintain those relationships with presenters. And I think these virtual conferences do that in a really big way. So
some great points. And Pav, I see you sketchnoting. So yeah. Either you're making plans for the next wreath you're going to make, or you have some incredible points to bring up right now.
I can't wait to finish my wreath tonight, Jay. Tim, I wanted to touch on a couple of things that you had mentioned. Jay and I, we actually talked about our first virtual conference presentation that we did recently. Like yourself, a couple of our live experiences were canceled, which was really unfortunate because they were going to be our first experiences. And so our face-to-face conferences, we were not able to attend, but we were able to present. And we have to say that there were some real big perks for us. So one of those perks for us was the accessibility. And I think that this is, just to reiterate your point, this is going to be one of the reasons why it will continue to be around, where this has staying power and people will continue to work on the webinar space. Not to say that face-to-face are not going to continue to happen either, but this is another entry point for so many people. We're thinking about, two presenters like us, where it's very difficult for us to take time to off from our work schedule to go and attend these conferences that might be happening somewhere where it's a little bit of a long drive or whatever the case may be. So we have to spend a couple of days there. And so the ability for us to prepare a presentation, deliver a presentation, be able to network with a couple of people, build on relationships, which I know that those face-to-face experiences really do offer very well. If we can build on those things, and then also be able to share those webinars or convince people to go back and watch the recorded webinars because it was very valuable, and we can have post registration or registration after the fact. These are things that are going to continue to be so valuable. So yes, I believe that these live streams that we're doing, similar to what we're doing right now, and then they're posted on YouTube, you can go and watch them at any point. So you find something useful, you want to take it back to your staff. Yes, absolutely. We can definitely build on that. And then the webinars and conferences themselves, the value of being able to present, especially for the accessibility or being able to provide different access points for people who just can't attend face-to-face. I mean, I think that's such a huge point.
That was a great point. Pav, I can no longer say anything because clearly you took all my notes and all my talking points. But there's growth for both. Like, it opens up the doors for people to present that maybe wouldn't have ever thought they'd have a chance. Regardless of how open it is, there's always a certain level of patronage and a certain system that's in there. And I think for Pav and I, for merely anecdotal, these are opportunities we wouldn't have had. We wouldn't have been giving presentations in a face-to-face. We just haven't amassed a resume that's worthy of that. But these capacities give us a little chances to make a little presentation here on podcasting. And then you do one, you do another, and all of a sudden you're doing a multitude of them. And it's not because our skill set has really improved, but there's been opportunity for people to go into that space. And I think with sort of the remote world, everyone has tools that allow them to do it. Everyone's got a slightly better mic. They've got a slightly better webcam where people have all those tools, so we can really bank on them. I assume as education moves forward, every teacher has those in their space. Every student has those in their space. Or if they're not, we're working to get them. Where, let's say a year ago, it would have been very difficult because there would have been a lot of troubleshooting to get teachers into that space. I think most educators are very comfortable to dive into this virtual space now. So I would add those two components as well. I see you got a couple more minutes. We're getting lots of great comments. If any of you guys wanted to refocus back on that, but I would ask you maybe to make a little comparative comment if you wanted, because I know all of us are very big in the live space and we're also very big in sort of that recorded space. What do you see as the benefit, the difference, the nuance? Tim, I know you posted something somewhere. I don't remember where, but it was a great graphic on sort of the pros and the negatives, of what the podcast experience versus the live experience may offer. So if you guys want to dive in on that question or revisit the second question, let's have a go.
I've been thinking about that first question, you know, for the last few days, thinking about this conversation here tonight. And I, in general, and someone alluded to it earlier in terms of Clubhouse, I mean, in general, the live stuff isn't going to be quite as high value on average, right? Simply because that asynchronous content, you can rehearse it, refine it, edit it, plan it a little better, deliver it exactly how you want to, you know, just go across YouTube. And chances are, if you're looking for a how-to tutorial, you're going to find one that's been finally edited. That said, there are pros and cons on both sides. And I think sometimes a well-planned live event can deliver really high value too. A little harder on Clubhouse with no visuals and difficult lasting power, but you know, in a forum like this, we can share some things and it can be highly valuable as well.
Great response. Noah, you want to dive in on that?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that. And then I want to circle back to something else. But I love the ability on the P3 where I get to edit myself out. Usually I listen to my cackle where I'm like, dude, I can't believe I just said that. This is their space. Be quiet. Because I really try to create the sacred space. But then Chris Quinn, who's on my show and it'll be released on Monday, he said, Noah, please just promise me you're not going to edit yourself out. And he made me cry. And I'm like, Chris, nobody needs to hear that. Like, this is about you. And he goes, this is my request. You can do with it what you want. But I don't know. I'm editing tomorrow, but I'm just sharing it with you all because there's a beauty in the post-production process that you can clean things up. But there's a beauty in the live process where you just can't, you know, and things go wrong and it's stressful and you don't know. But I think everybody's on that ride with you and there's something really neat about it. But I want to come back to, sorry for a sec, Pab. Yeah. Do you want to respond to that? Because I wanted to talk about the conference format.
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly say, I really hope you don't, because Chris Quinn messaged me today and he was very excited. He actually did message and say that he's very excited that he was on P3. That was random and it came out of the blue. And so he's very happy to be on the show. So I hope you honor that request for him. And that authenticity, like you mentioned yourself, is something that people really like to be able to hear. So I think I just wanted to throw that in there. So that's it. You can continue.
Okay. I appreciate that. And I think the universe has kind of decided that I'm going to leave it. But anyway, the thing about conferences, and it was really neat participating in the California School Librarian Association conference, because what they did that was really neat was Discord. So they tried to create the hallway conversation so that people could come out of a session and talk about it and interact. And that was really, really brilliant. And I think the other thing that was neat, just going back to access and really, Che, you said it, is I'm not going to California. Like I would never, and I didn't apply, and it was a really cool story. I was supposed to do like the last 5 minutes of a closing thing. And they were like, Noah, your stuff is really good. We want you to do an hour. Is that okay? And I'm like, okay, but I didn't have to fly to California. And then when I did fly to Atlanta, that was really great. And I spent 3 days by myself in Atlanta, having a very interesting, logical, like very cool conversation kind of time, but I can't do that every day, right? So it's really nice to have the option and the access. At the Mentory, when people say, you know, I'm in Kuwait, I'm somewhere else in the world, I want to participate in the Mentory, we're boardless and borderless. And I think that we've seen the possibility and the reach and the access that this virtual space can have.
There's so much to all of these things. And I think if I come back to what Noah said, there's so much access and you can go and dive into the spaces that you know suit you best. So I've never had a negative experience in Clubhouse, but is Clubhouse going to be where I go to find something direct for my classroom? Not likely. I'm going to go somewhere else, but I'm not going to take Clubhouse out of my portfolio of things I'm going to go into. You know, if I'm getting ready to go to school, I'll quickly Clubhouse and take a listen. Tim, I see you jumping in and you can jump on me because I'm the new guy here.
One thing I would say about Clubhouse, and some of our viewers will probably resonate with this, but if you're looking for really practical stuff, some of the best people I've seen out there are Monica Burns, whose name has already come up, and Rochelle Denae Poth. She is organizing a lot of rooms, and often it'll be titled EdTech Tools that you can use in your classroom or something very applicable. And some of those ideas shared there, Che, have been some of the best value I've gotten on Clubhouse in terms of that practical sort of application. Now, other times you just hear a really inspiring philosophy and we love that too, but just shouting out a couple of ladies who are doing fantastic work in that space.
Those are some great shares. Pat, have you got anything to jump in on? Rather than, I know you're excited to get back to your wreath, but we got a few more moments we could talk about live.
My wreath is beautiful. It's burlap and yellow flowers, and it will look great on my blue door. That's all.
All right. I think we've had this very short time, although we've gone overtime here. So I think I get a $3.1 million signing bonus for this. And I owe it all to this great Canadian connections here. Because, you know, us Canadians, like, we can talk for a long time. It's like having a cup of Tim Hortons. Before we wrap up, Noah, Tim, let us know where we can find you, where we can connect on your live shows, and where we can connect on your podcast as we wrap up here tonight on Office Hours.
You can find me every Music Monday, a new P3 drops, and you should definitely listen on Voiced Radio, but you can listen wherever you like to listen to the amazing guests and how they unpack their stories through their nostalgic identity and pick-me-up songs. And every Thursday, I'm live on Voiced Radio from 9 to 10 p.m. EST. You can also find me at The Mentory or, of course, at buildingoutsidetheblocks.com, where everything I do is kind of about finding those fixed spaces and ways to go beyond them. So thanks so much for having me. And I'm so excited that so many things are happening now.
Pav, let us know what you're up to and what shows you can be found on.
So I just wanted to say once again, thank you to Tim and Noah for coming on and talking with us today. As Che and I mentioned so many times, we're honored to have every conversation with you. And we've spoken so many times to one another on your shows as well. And so we're always honored to be featured with you. And so we really do appreciate, and we are honored to have you here. Che and I release a new Staff Room Podcast episode every Friday evening, which is recorded in one take. And so it's you're getting it fresh. We record and we publish right away. And then on Sunday evenings from 8:30 to 10 p.m., we are live on The Drive, our music radio talk show. And that is on Voiced Radio. And you can also find that on cheyennepav.com/radio.
Oof, we paid the big bucks for that webpage. All right, everyone, thank you so much for joining us on Office Hours with School Rubric every Tuesday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Thank you so much for joining this great conversation about podcasting and live experience and webinars and all these great new places we can get some personalized professional PD. Thank you for joining us.
My name is Tim Cavey, and I'm proud to contribute to the education conversation through the Teachers on Fire podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe to the Teachers on Fire channel on YouTube, where you can interact with me and my guests every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern. I also want to express another thank you to Wallace Ting and Ryan Segarra, owners of the School Rubric channel on YouTube, for their permission to repurpose this content here. If you haven't connected with me yet on social media, you'll find me absolutely everywhere at Teachers on Fire. Please reach out on any platform, tag me, and let me know that you found value in this episode. Doing so pours crazy fuel on my fire and inspires me to continue this important work of amplifying voices and sharing ideas in K-12 education. Thanks again for listening to this episode in these challenging times. Take care, share an encouraging message to lift up a colleague, and keep that fire for learning burning bright.